This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. As we move into February, we're getting close to spring, time for spring vacations. It's time to give the vacation planners at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel a call to help you plan your vacation, be it a Disney vacation or otherwise. So give them a call and visit them at MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Hi, this is Melinda Hamrick. I'm from Irmo, South Carolina, and you're listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 143 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Michael. How are you today? So I have an announcement and then a shout-out, and our announcement is for the Princess Race Weekend. I mentioned this before. We're going to have a meetup on February 22nd at 3 p.m. That's Saturday at the Boardwalk Bakery, outside the Boardwalk Bakery, not inside because it's not too big, but that should be cool. And my shout-out today is to a listener named Brian Wilson, who posted a picture on our Facebook page. He did the Daytona Speedway 5K, and he posted a picture of his son doing his first 5K. So, yay, Brian and son.
Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys?
I don't think it was Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, but no. I'm sure he never hears that.
And one more thing, Michelle, for the Glass Slipper Challenge next month, we don't have to run the 10K and the half in glass slippers, right?
You didn't get the memo?
Oh, no.
and a tiara.
And a tiara. Well, I've run my last race in a tutu, so I just want to throw that out there right now. It is January, and everyone knows that when someone mentions January, the word New Year's resolutions come up. And I remember one person on the radio said, my New Year's resolution this year is to keep my New Year's resolution. But with New Year's resolution comes usually the intent to become healthier, to become better, lose weight, a lot of other things. And so we decided that it would be a good time to bring on several experts who would help us do a little jump start in our training. And so we have brought on two personal trainers, both are certified running coaches, and I'd like to introduce them right now. First is Amy Doyle. Amy, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
And returning engagement, Seth Ziegler. Hi, Seth. How are you?
Hey, Mike. I'm well. Thank you.
And can I just say they're both my trainers. Then they're awesome. They're both awesome. So I'm so excited they're here.
And
you're
so
right, we are.
Now, they've seen me at my worst.
You can find Seth at bigpickwellness.com. We'll have that information in our show notes. And if you want to find out more about Seth, he has some interesting blogs on this very subject. I forgot to mention that Amy is the coach for a running organization in Nashua, New Hampshire. And this running organization has been around for about, Amy, would you say about 30, 40 years maybe?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I think it's the biggest one in southern New Hampshire. I'm going to say total, there's about 600 members.
They are known as the Gate City Striders. And I know Michelle and I have run in races with them, and there are tons of them. There are tons of them. So we brought on a couple of experts who could really help us nail down how to jumpstart our training programs for 2014. And so the first thing I think I'd like to throw out there is when you start a program anytime, what things should you put down on paper? What are the most essential elements before you even take that first physical step?
Well, I think the most important thing to start with is making sure that your goals are, you've probably heard of the SMART goals, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. You know, you don't want to just say like, you know what, I want to start running more this year. That's way too vague. You want to be more specific and say, okay, I want to run X amount of miles per week, or I want to train to achieve a particular race distance by a certain date, so that you can really put some structure into your resolution.
Great. And I definitely, Seth, I'd add on to that, that you just want to make sure that you're healthy enough to be able to continue on with your training. You can't start from, you know, zero and think that you can run a marathon the next month. So just being health conscious about that.
You know, Amy, I was going to ask you, when as coach for the Nashua, what do we call them?
Gate
City Striders. My God, it's been a while. So,
where are you from, Mike?
Are there people who join that organization who have been on the couch and who have never run, and they come to you and they say, Amy, turn me into a marathoner?
Yes, there are a few. The Striders do have a Couch to 5K program that is for those type of people, but some of the people that do join initially have set their expectations a little too high for where their fitness level is currently at. But that's all right. We work with it.
So, Seth, do you find that when people come to you with the why and want to work with you, they just sometimes just present themselves and you have to try to encourage them to make goals based on their fitness level? Or, you know, are they usually coming to you for a reason, or do you sometimes have to guide them into certain goals?
You know, it's a mix. The running clients I've worked with have more specific ideas about what they want to do. And you get a fair amount of that sort of couch to 5K crowd. And I always, like Amy said, one of the things I always talk about with them in the beginning is watching out for what I call TMTS syndrome, you know, too much too soon. Because that's how most runners get injured, doing too many miles or too much speed or trying to put in too much training without having established a good base for it. But then you also get a lot of people who are just kind of seeking fitness, wellness. And most of the time, I don't think they put in a lot of specific thought about what it is, what that goal realization looks like to them. You know, they say, I want to feel better. I want to be healthier. I want to lose weight. But, you know, as I said, those are all very vague, and it's very easy to get off track or derail on a goal when you don't even really know exactly what that goal is.
So it sounds like that's a big pitfall for a lot of people, because they do not have a specific goal. Everything is vague. Everything is cloudy. They just say, I want to get better, rather than saying, you know, for the first 6 months, I want to, by the end of the first 6 months of 2014, I want to A, have lost 25 pounds, and I want to be able to run a 5K race. So are we talking, Seth, that we want to look at those specific goals, and that way, number one, we have target, and number two, we can actually measure our progress?
Yes, exactly. And working with a trainer, working with a coach helps that, because that's one of the things that a trainer or a coach will do in the beginning, is sit down and start to create that structure if it isn't already there. And Mike, I picked up on one thing you said in that I think when we're talking about how people get derailed or get discouraged when they're doing this, you said, like, I want to lose 25 pounds by June. Like, you know, that's a common thing you hear people say. When you do a bigger number further out, it's easier to get discouraged and feel like, oh, I'm never going to lose 25 pounds. Because you're looking at that big number. You want to say, let's lose 1 pound a week for the next month, so that, you know, this month we're going to lose 4 pounds or something like that. That's much more psychologically, that's less intimidating. It's a smaller number. And after a while, those smaller numbers add up to roll into your big number that was the goal. But if, you know, it's that whole kind of thing. If you said, you know, I'm going to run 1,000 miles this year, and you're always thinking about the number 1,000, after a 3 mile run, that feels like, oh my God.
Yeah, you're right. I think that you're right. When you have a short term goal that's realistic, that's reachable, I think that it does a lot of things. Number one, if you have a realistic short term goal and you achieve that, then it boosts your confidence. It motivates you to continue, and you know, makes the journey more enjoyable too.
Absolutely.
So this is so interesting. I think, you know, sometimes even having a race planned, you know, just whatever race of whatever distance that you feel like you can do is, I think you mentioned this earlier, is very helpful. So, Amy, I wanted to ask you, I'm sure that you have a lot. Well, I know because I go to the Y in January and I know what I expect to see in January, which is lots and lots of people there. And I know it's probably because of New Year's resolutions. And I notice, you know, by about this time, there are fewer people there. I'm wondering, you know, I think it's hard sometimes to keep fitness resolutions. And what sort of things do you think cause people to give up these resolutions? Is it that the goals are not clear? Or what's your opinion about it?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of this lately. Is that, and I love it, instead of thinking of a resolution for the whole year, I'm seeing now that people are just taking 30-day resolutions or 30-day challenges. So instead of thinking, I want to lose 50 pounds this year, like we said, you're going to lose, you know, 10 pounds at a time. So some examples of that could be, this month for January, my resolution may be to not add sugar to things, or my resolution for February may be to swim at least one time a week. So breaking up that annual resolution into smaller, manageable things, like 30-day challenges.
That's a great idea. Seth, what do you think?
Yeah, I like what one thing Amy is saying in there that really stood out is talking about, I'm going to do this one item. And I think sometimes people bite off way too much at one time. So, you know, they hit January and they say, oh my God, I'm going to, so let's say you've got someone who doesn't exercise, hasn't been eating well, and they say, I'm going to start eating more vegetables and more fruit every day. I'm going to cut back how much red meat I'm eating. I'm going to go to the gym at least 3 times a week. And I'm going to, you know, and all of a sudden they've got this list of 4 or 5 action items that they're going to use to make their life healthier.
And they're going to do it all.
And they're going to do it all. And after a week, you're exhausted because you just tried to completely overhaul some really major aspects of your life. And instead of saying, you know, trying to go after all those things, like Amy said, I'm going to not add sugar to something, to my coffee, or I'm going to eat less sweets. Just focusing on reducing that one thing is going to make a big difference. Once you've got the handle on that, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
So these are like habits and big lifestyle changes. Even not adding sugar can be, you know, a habit that you need to break that might take a little getting used to before you jump in and add something else. So that makes complete sense to me. So you both teach all sorts of different courses in, you know, core training and fitness and swimming and all sorts of things. If people are starting to lose their focus, you know, maybe they want to work on their fitness level. What are 2 or 3 little changes? You know, maybe they've gotten into a routine and they do a workout and they're losing interest. What are some things that you would recommend that they could do to kind of jumpstart their fitness and their commitment to doing these exercises and things like that? Seth, what do you think?
You know, I'll tell you one little trick that worked for me in the past, and I'll, just for the viewers and listeners who aren't familiar with my story, I've gone through the weight loss thing myself in my past life as a corporate baron. So one thing I found worked for me was signing up to do races or events out in the future that I had to train for that were a bit of a reach for me, a little outside my comfort zone. So example, like taking on triathlon when I hated swimming, as Amy will attest, I still complain about swimming a lot. But, you know, if you have something on a calendar or if you're training with a group for a certain event, like a lot of people are doing the obstacle races, et cetera. And I'm sure you've seen with the podcast here, you meet a lot of people that are training to do these races together with friends. That's a great way to keep yourself motivated because you're creating a level of accountability there by bringing other people into it or by, you know, saying, okay, you know, on June 1st, you're going to be at the starting line for this race. So if you want it to be less miserable, it'd be a good idea to stick to your training regimen.
I think that's a great idea. And with Facebook, I know that we have little groups of people who train together and are, you know, going to the same race. You can easily be accountable by starting your own little Facebook closed group.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one thing about the social media now. You don't have to have a group that you're actually lacing up the sneakers with together on a Sunday morning you could be all across the country, but you're staying in close contact and keeping each other going that way.
Amy, what do you think? What sort of things do you think?
Could... I think Seth just mentioned sparked that there that virtual races are a huge thing now, and they cost a lot less money where you sign up for something and you're doing the mileage on your own, but you still get the medal sent to you in the mail. So that's kind of a cool thing. But definitely staying race ready by having those races registered on your calendar helps you stay motivated to train. One other thing that works for me is to have a mantra that I say to myself every day. And for me, mine is find a way. So I find a way to make whatever it is happen. And the line between two points may not always be straight, but somehow I'm going to find a way. And right now I'm fortunate that I don't have to, it's not very hard because I just work part-time, but at some point it's going to get more difficult and I'll have to work a lot harder to find a way. So finding a mantra that you can use that's going to help you stay motivated is one.
So do you ever feel like I feel sometimes, because I have to do a lot of my training in the morning, where the alarm goes off and it's 4:30 and boy, would it be easy to, you know, it's super cold outside and it would be really easy just to hit snooze and sleep for an extra hour. Am I the only one who feels that way, or do you guys feel that way? If so, how do you get around that? Do you use the mantra, Amy, find a way, or what do you do?
Oh, absolutely. I think it, because if you don't, and you know in the end, you'll be happy that you did. But, for example, if it is really cold, you can do other things in your home. Seth and I know we can make a home gym with hardly any equipment and do something, for example, like called high-intensity interval training, where you can put together a little thing just to get some fitness in. And it doesn't always have to be running. It's nice when it is, but it doesn't always have to be.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple things happen if you keep doing sort of the same exercise or the same routine. One, you get bored with it. And you start to lose a little bit of interest and it starts to feel tedious. And then the second thing is your body gets used to it too. It adapts to that certain type or level of work and it doesn't adapt much beyond that. So you sort of plateau. So mixing it up and trying different exercises, trying different routines. And there's so many sources now, you know, when you're searching something out on the internet, just make sure it's a reputable source. There's a ton of videos on YouTube with different exercises. Some are great. Some are a chiropractor's dream because they're just creating a backlog of work for them.
How would you know the difference?
You know, I think you kind of have to look at what are the credentials, what are the, you know, what's the history, the background of the person showing it. Also, to some extent, what's the quality of the video production? You know, if someone has a training business and part of what they do is video instructions or YouTube videos there, and they take it seriously and make nice production quality and talk about who they are as a trainer and their background. Well, you can tell that means something to them. That's a lot different than, you know, a couple buddies in a garage with a flip phone or just like, you know, watch how much weight, you know, Bobby can lift over his head.
So, one of the things that I did recently, which I found very helpful, was I had a swimming lesson. Amy gave me a swimming lesson. I haven't had one since I was in fourth or fifth grade. And she just watched me swim, and I wanted to add swimming into what I was doing to do some cross training. It was so helpful to me just to work with you, Amy, just for a half an hour. And so I'm wondering, for people who are running and want to get some other cross training, and what would you recommend? I mean, I'm assuming you think swimming is a good thing. What would you recommend for other great cross training exercises for runners?
Right, exactly. Well, we want to make sure we always get a full body balance. Like you said, swimming is definitely one. I think sometimes people, when they don't have time, the first thing that they throw out is flexibility training. And it's so important to stay flexible and being able to move freely. So flexibility training, or like that would be a yoga class, or incorporating foam rolling into it, and making sure that when we do strength training, we hire a trainer, first of all, and we want to make sure we have strong glutes and hips and a core. So strength training with a trainer, flexibility training like yoga, and foam rolling.
What I like to throw in for some cross training, so agree with everything Amy just said, and Michelle, working with me, you know how much we talk about glutes and core and posterior chain and all that.
And I'm not flexible at all. So I'm taking note.
Well, I'm going to put that on Amy. She needs to handle that in the swim lessons. passing the buck. As far as getting some, you know, if you want to take a break from some running and get in some other cardio-related or activity, I'm a huge fan of cycling. Just personally, it's one of the things I love most, off-road and road. I also like hiking as another activity for runners because it's introducing unstable ground, so it's helping with some lower leg, foot, and ankle stability and strengthening as well, so there's some advantage in that.
And I know you like Zumba too, because whenever I'm working with you, the Zumba class is going on, and you look longingly over to the studio.
I know, yeah. You see my hips shake a little bit.
Moves, yes.
They don't lie.
So one of the things I wanted to cover before we wrap up the show is that there are some people who are listening to the podcast who may be thinking about going from couch to 5K, or who are runners out there who are thinking about improving their situation, maybe to talk to and engage with a professional trainer. So Seth and Amy, one of the things I wanted to ask you is that when it comes to the relationship between a trainer and a client, I think one of the most important things that you guys need is feedback from your clients. And so with that, could you give us an idea as to what the most important feedback that a client can give you that you can use in turn to help your client with their goals?
For me personally, when it's such a surprise after I've been training with somebody for a long time, and then they just happen to mention a knee injury or a hip injury or a back injury that I didn't know about, and that would have been great if I had known about it, and then we could have done some different strength training exercises or stayed away from some things. So it's always nice to be upfront with any, even if it's a manageable type of injury. It's great to know all of that.
Yeah, the earlier you know in the process, the better you can prepare for what type of exercises and things you can do. Seth, what about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with Amy on that, absolutely. And I've even had, and I'm sure Amy's had this happen to you, ask people in the beginning, any surgery history, any injuries, anything? And like, no. And then, yeah, like weeks later, it's like, oh, yeah, I completely tweaked my knee skiing a couple of years ago. Like, that would fall under the injury category we're talking about.
Exactly.
But, in addition to that, it's important, and we, a good trainer will do this, is you have a conversation in the beginning where you're talking about what it is that person is looking to achieve. And it might be vague and we need to drill into it more. They might have some very specific goals. And you'll know yourself as a trainer if you're a good fit for them. You know, when Michelle asked me a while back about someone to help with swimming, I knew I was absolutely not the person for that, but I knew Amy was. So you've got to know your limitations as a trainer. And then when you're getting the feedback from the clients, one thing we do is we will ask an open-ended question so that we're not leading the client, as opposed to asking Michelle, like, do you feel this in the glute? I would ask her, where do you feel this? Where are you feeling this exercise? And if she's like, oh, it's completely in the back of my elbows, and I know something's gone askew.
I have to say, too, that my back has been hurting me lately, and both of you have been really great about modifications where I feel like I'm successful, but may not be, straining my back more, but I'm still successful at whatever I'm trying to do. So, I wanted to ask one more thing, which is, well, actually, it's two things. I have two questions for you. The first one is, I had an experience at the Y where I was working with somebody who it wasn't a good fit for me. And What do you think are the things that people should look for when they're looking for a trainer? The reason it wasn't a good fit is just the person I think was maybe used to training elite athletes. And with both of you, I always feel like you meet me exactly where I am and kind of push me a little bit further that I need to be pushed based on my own needs. But what sort of things are maybe red flags that it's not working out? Because you can always change. What do you think?
I've had it happen with myself even where I've worked with clients in the past and, the trainer should pick up on it and know too, like, this is not a good fit. And sometimes it's just personalities that the chemistry isn't there. And other times it might be that the needs aren't being met. You know, if you find yourself in that situation, if you feel comfortable enough talking to the trainer about it, that's great. And, you know, you can put out what your concerns are. Or, you know, if it's in a facility, there's going to be a supervisor or someone you could go to and say, you know, so-and-so is really great. I just don't know if they're the right trainer for me, and give some idea of what specific need you're looking to have addressed.
Definitely what Seth said, especially that last piece, you can always ask for another trainer, or geez, you could even make up a schedule problem where you can't meet with that person.
Well, I mean, it would make sense that not every person, you know, people don't match with every teacher that they have, and they don't work well with everybody all the time. So it makes sense that you shouldn't give up if that person doesn't meet your needs or help you meet your goals.
Yeah. So, the most important thing is you just want to be comfortable with that person. And if you feel like the conversation always comes back to the trainer, there are so many qualified people, but they should not be going on about whatever it is that you're actually training for. You know, everybody's got a thing. And so sometimes I feel like some people bring it back to themselves too much.
Right. So my last question is, as we wrap up, I used to think that having a trainer is something that only really rich and wealthy people could do, but going to the Y made it very affordable for me. And so I'm wondering if you could give some suggestions about where people could go, because people all over the world listen to this podcast, but all over America and all over the world. What are some suggestions where people can find trainers? The Y is one.
Yeah, the YMCA. I mean, obviously there's a lot of Ys, and that's going to be one of the best because, you know, the Ys are nonprofits and they run on a different mode than large corporate chain for-profit companies. That being said,
is this something you can do an internet search on and, you know, just your town and trainers, or are there people who do virtual training?
You know, I would say one thing I would look at is groups of friends, talk, you know, get word of mouth. Who's got a trainer they really love that they work with? Yelp, something like Yelp nowadays could be a good source. With the internet, there aren't as many great kept secrets as there used to be.
And you could also maybe group together with some peers and train together.
You can.
Yes.
Sorry, Seth. There's a place called Idea Fit, and that's kind of like the who's who in personal training. And I also, so that's a great place to go to find a trainer in your area.
Great, thank you.
Okay, well, we've learned a lot tonight, and she is Amy Doyle. He is Seth Ziegler. They are both professional trainers and both certified running coaches. And we thank you guys for coming on board and helping our listeners get an idea as to what it takes to jumpstart their training program for 2014. So thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
And I just want to say one last thing, that regardless of your speed, you are a runner. So pace may be something, but it's not everything.
Well, you're going to hear a lot of cheers for that one, because I know everybody listening to the show believes that too. Thank
and
you.
Amy, yeah. Amy was just saying that because I'm on here too, and she's way faster than me.
Well, I can tell you right now, I don't see too many PRs anymore because I've been running for such a long time. So it's just as long as I can get out there and run, that's all that matters. So,
exactly.
So thanks again. So for Amy Doyle, for Seth Ziegler, and Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road.
This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And when it comes to professional vacation planners, nobody beats the vacation planners at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. We've been using them for years, and we hope that you will give them a try. So visit them at mei-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or you can click on their banner where? At mickeymilespodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.